Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You guys are due some Nats tickets, so here's the drill. If you can answer the question I'm about to ask you and be the 10th caller at 800-636-1067, you're going to win those tickets. The Nationals have had two pitchers pitch in 10 games, leading them in appearances. Name one of those two pitchers. If you could do that, call in 800-636-1067. You'll win those tickets to see the Nats take on the Padres April 27th at Nats Park. 106.7 The Fan and PenFed Credit Union are taking you out to the ballgame all season long, courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details at thefandc.com/contests. Les Carpenter covers the Redskins for the Washington Post. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Les, the Redskins get a 3-year deal done with Matt Ioannidis. This seems like Washington behaving like the really good teams in the league. They draft a guy in the 5th round. He turns out to be better than most people thought he was going to be. And now they lock him up. Job well done, Bruce Allen and company. Is there any more to it than that?
No, that seems good. I mean, I guess I would say that if this was the Patriots, they would have traded him by now. and found three other guys to draft. But yeah, I know. I think it is a smart move. You lock him up. You now have Clint Copeland, who I work with at the Post, had a great little tweet the other day. You have basically a line of Ioannidis is 25, Jonathan Allen's 24, and then you got Deron Payne at 21. You know, throwing Settle there. I think he's like 21 also. You suddenly have a very young, solid line that seems like you could really build around, and you can kind of extend it out. You can see, you know, you got a lot of younger guys even in the middle. Landon Collins is still only 25. You can start to see that the core of that defense, at least up front and in the middle, is young, and you want your defenses young. You want these guys to be able to run around and tackle, and you don't want old defenses.
Les, how good do they think this defense is going to be? Versus how good do you think maybe your perception or league perception is of how good they're going to be?
You know, when I talk to people about the Redskins, usually a couple things come up quickly. And one is, this is a team that they play hard defensively. Coaches around the league say, I really like the way that defense played last year. I like the aggressiveness they had. I hear a lot of good things when people talk about it. Now, they're not raving, they're not saying it's the greatest defense in the league. They're saying, though, that it is a very solid defense and that they like the attitude that it played with. Obviously that tailed off last year. Some of that was injuries. I think the offensive injuries had a lot to do with that as well. They just weren't doing much offensively at the end with a decimated line, without quarterbacks that I think probably put undue pressure on the defense. You know, we went over all that last year a lot. But I think around the league that people see this as a solid defense that definitely is legitimate. I don't know how they would rank them if they ranked them 1 to 32, but it would be solid. It would be in the top half easily, maybe even in the top quarter.
Les Carpenter covers the Redskins for the Washington Post. Ryan Kerrigan on the outside is a guy that you can kind of staple in for 12 sacks. Preston Smith, whatever you thought of him opposite Kerrigan, was a pretty stout, known player as well. Ryan Anderson is not that, and he's shown no ability to rush the quarterback to this point. Do they feel like they can go into the season with Anderson as their outside linebacker?
Well, I mean, publicly, that's what they're saying, but I just kind of look at where this draft is lying right now, where they are at 15, with the kind of players that might be there. I'd say edge rusher is a position that you could really probably do a good job upgrading with in the first round of this draft. You know, I just think all signs point to the fact that the Redskins are going to do something at that position in a draft, whether they do it early or whether it's, you know, a little bit more in the middle. But I would not be stunned if the first pick on Thursday night is an edge rusher. And, you know, I don't think that would be a bad thing for them at all.
Les Carpenter with us, covers the Redskins for the Washington Post. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Les, to me, I want more urgency to figure out some talent on this offense. I feel like every inch last year was by design and schemed up, and there's nothing easy about what they do at this point. We took guys like DeSean Jackson for granted just to make it not only what he would do deep, but able to create space for other guys. Nothing came easy to them last year, and I think that comes from some explosiveness. That's got to be something they should have maybe already targeted, but will definitely be targeting in the draft, yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I guess I would say I don't know if it's going to be the same kind of explosiveness that you remember from a few years back. I think that they would rather be efficient on offense rather than explosive. I don't know if they want a 40-point offense as much as they want an offense that would do a better job of controlling the ball than maybe it did certainly the second half of last year, rely on that defense that they're building, and be able to do a lot more with the run game. You know, I think they felt, certainly at the end of last year, with all the injuries on the line, with the quarterbacks that they're running out there, that, you know, you were just doing a whole lot of third and tens, and you really weren't getting anything going. But I know the temptation out there is everyone wants that big, fast receiver, that big, splashy guy, and I just don't know that that's what they're going to do. I mean, maybe that offensive upgrade will be a tight end. I think they're trending more to being a bit more of a ball control team than necessarily a lot of fans might want to see.
Certainly feels that way. Follow Les on Twitter, at Les Carpenter. What percentage chance do you give the Redskins trading Josh Rosen by this time next week?
You know, just for the sake of it, I'd give it at least a 1/3%, you know, a 33% chance.
Okay.
But that's just off the top of my head. I really don't know where those talks are or if that's truly going to happen. They're interested, but does that mean that's the move they make? There's a lot of questions on both sides.
So is it a matter of desire from the Cardinals' perspective, or is it the Redskins aren't willing to just up the bid? What do you make of this? Because to me, this is a no-brainer. To go get a guy on his rookie deal, yeah, minus 1 year, Les, but a guy that by all accounts would be a top 10 quarterback again this year without having to do that kind of RG3 godfather offer to move up a few spots. Seems to me to be a no-brainer, and I'm wondering where the disconnect is.
Well, first of all, from the Cardinals' perspective, if they're drafting Kyler Murray, which you know everyone seems to believe they will do, then I would assume they'll trade him. I don't think you keep around a guy like that because you just don't need to. From the Redskins' point of view, I don't know. I would think it's a couple things. You have to be sure they want him. We don't know how much they want him. I know they're interested. I know they like him. But does that mean they really want him? There certainly was a two schools of thought on Josh Rosen coming out of college, you know, that this guy was a bit, you know, I want to call him, he was certainly labeled as a guy who may not have been a great locker room leader. And do the Redskins want to do that? I mean, he's got all the talent on the field, but is he that guy, you know, inside? He didn't win big in college. Not all that obviously was his fault, but I think people may look at that and say, well, is that the guy we want? So I think you have to ask, do the Redskins feel that way? I don't know. We'll probably know a lot more in a few days, but I think those would be some of the questions that would be asked, and then you have to put a value on that. And is that a first round player for you? Do you trade a first round pick? You know, maybe a New England would at the end of the draft, because then you can develop a guy behind Tom Brady, but the Redskins may not look at it that way. So that's why I kind of put, you know, a bit of a hesitation on saying, oh yeah, I think they're going to go run out and make a trade.
Les, get your rest this weekend. Big week for you coming up.
Yeah, buddy.
On Thursday night. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a big week for you guys, too.
Yes, it always
is. That's right.
That's right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Les.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Les Carpenter is always fun to catch up with from the Washington Post. 1:45 today, about 30 minutes or so out. We've got, speaking of the Redskins in the draft, tickets to their party at the Anthem. Make sure you're listening at the end of our show. Next, we'll multitask. I've got a story I saw about a dog that's one of the craziest things I've ever heard in my life, and I think you guys will really like it. even Danny, who doesn't like dogs. Second, Sean Doolittle is getting overused. We've got some numbers that are alarming for you. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We'll get to those alarming Sean Doolittle usage numbers and usage rate in a minute. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. I saw this story last night. It's actually a few days old, so if some of you guys have seen this, I don't think you'll mind hearing it again. But I completely missed it. I don't know if you saw this, Danny. Did you hear about a dog that was found way out in the ocean?
No.
Okay, so a dog was found treading water and swimming 135 miles offshore.
You realize how minuscule the odds are that that would happen?
I don't think I have a good perspective on how big the ocean is and how small a dog is, so I probably underrate it, to be honest.
I mean, the most ludicrous part of Castaway is not the surviving of the plane wreck. And the fact that they're ice skates to give him like a cutting tool so you go open up the coconuts. It's that he's just drifting and there's an ocean liner that happens to pass right by that
eventually.
He gets picked. It's absurd. That's absurd. Like the amount of square miles for someone to happen to be close enough to spot a dog treading water is minuscule. That's amazing.
So just reading from CBS News out of Bangkok here, a dog found swimming more than 135 miles offshore by workers on an oil rig. So it was Harry Stamper and his crew, I guess.
We're looking for dogs out here.
On the oil rig. Well done. A worker on the rig belonging to Chevron Thailand Exploration, his name was Visitek Pailaw, said on his Facebook page that they saw the dog swimming toward their platform last Friday.
Amazing.
He said they were lucky to spot it. If there were any waves, they wouldn't have seen the dog at all, but I guess it was really calm, so they rescued the dog. It took a bunch of time and a bunch of hands on deck to do so. His eyes were so sad, he said, about the dog. He just kept looking up like he wanted to say, please help me. At that moment, whoever saw this, they would just have to help. The dog made it to the flat platform, clinging to life, supporting structure below the deck without barking or whimpering. He didn't have the energy, I guess, to make any noise. And the dog looks... I mean, it looks completely miserable and disheveled, obviously,
course,
from being in the ocean. But it's a really good-looking, like, someone's pet-type dog.
Wow.
The crew lowered a rope, secured it around the dog's neck like a noose, basically, hauled the dog up into the boat. They dubbed the dog Boonrod, or Survivor, which is kind of a great name.
It's amazing.
135 miles. So one of two things happened. I can't imagine the dog started on land and basically shredded water for 135
miles. Yeah, let's see
miles.
What's out here. There's no way.
Maybe you go into the water, but you're not surviving for 135 miles.
No.
I have to imagine this dog was on somebody's ship or boat or something and fell off, and nobody knew it until much later, and it's just been in the water ever since, I'm guessing?
That's the only explanation I can think of. Or, honestly, does that mean you should start looking for wreckage? Maybe a ship went down. And there's a Jack and Rose scenario, and you know, this time he swam to safety. That's amazing.
But look at this picture of this dog just chilling on, so wet,
yeah.
just so
scared
sad.
And exhausted.
Yeah, it was amazing.
That is incredible, man.
I just love that story.
That's incredible.
I read it last night between the first and second periods, and it lifted me up a little bit.
Felt a little better?
When I needed it.
No 17 seconds in give up goal on that story.
No, this won't be as uplifting. This is from The Athletic. This is Britt Giroli, who does a really good job covering the Nationals. If you haven't seen her work, you got to check her out in The Athletic. Sean Doolittle's been great. He gave up his first run of the season yesterday, got his second save. He's obviously also got three wins for the Nationals early this year. 9 2/3 innings pitched, an appearance in 9 of Washington's first 17 games. That's a pace that would have Doolittle pitching in 85 games this season. That's not going to happen. That can't be allowed to happen.
It just can't happen.
He actually hadn't pitched in more than 60 games since 2014, but Britt actually went deeper into the numbers. Here was her story. On Wednesday, Martinez wanted to use ready Kyle Bearclaw for an out to keep Doolittle's pitch count down in the event that he was needed Thursday for good reason. Doolittle has thrown 164 pitches this season. easily surpasses Wander Suero, who's thrown less than 150 for most on the team. Doolittle, in the year in which he threw the most pitches he's ever thrown in his career, Danny, 2013, 70 games with the A's, he threw 1,000 pitches. He's on pace to throw 510 more pitches this year. In 2018, he only threw 620. Remember, it was an injury-shortened season, 43 outings. But he's being used at a rate right now that just simply cannot continue.
Again, another effect of Trevor Rosenthal's disastrous beginning. Another effect of this bullpen in general not being good enough. Because he should have pitched in 6 games at this point, not 9. One of them, you're winning 12-1 in the 7th. One of them, you're up 7 runs at the start of the 9th inning. Please don't have your closer get hot and come into that game.
The crazier stat than those, and this was not in Britt's piece, but I saw Jamal Collier tweet this yesterday, and I'm just taking his word as gospel here because I didn't fact check this, but he does a heck of a job covering the team, so he's reputable to me. I believe he tweeted yesterday that Sean Doolittle has warmed or pitched, but basically gotten up in the bullpen and thrown 14 times in 17
kidding?
Games.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that number.
Again, I did not go fact check that. But if that is correct, just know that that is horrific.
Let's say Jamal's wrong and it's 12. Alert, emergency. 9's already too much. 9 is already too much. And he's pitched multiple innings, or across multiple innings on at least one occasion. This is unsustainable. This is the real super negative domino effect of a bullpen being ineffective, is the guys that are get hurt. And this is a guy that, frankly, has gotten hurt even without overuse at times. Last year with the foot injury, he's had shoulder problems in the past. They need to do a better job. They've got to find a way to stay off him. The problem is you have no luxuries. Now, you have no room for error because, again, Rosenthal's been such a disaster and because the division's good.
Well, and it wasn't just Rosenthal. So Rosenthal's the biggest problem, to your point. He was the 8th inning arm. He's backfired. I don't really get why they're not using Barraclough right now as the setup man in the 8th inning. I guess I say that in one sentence, and in the next second sentence, I maybe answer it. They don't have anyone in the 7th inning to get the ball to him.
Yeah.
So they've, for the most part, needed him earlier than in the 8th inning. If you actually trusted someone to get him the ball, and Wander Suero maybe is rounding into that role, I'd like to see Joe Ross a couple more times maybe in the 6th, 7th innings of some of these games. But if you could get to a point where Bearclaw pitches the 8th, then maybe you could stay off Doolittle for more than 3 out saves, which he's already gotten 2 of, which last year was unheard of. You never really saw him in the 8th inning. But we've already seen it multiple times now. But it was, to your point, Rosenthal not working, backfiring on them. Justin Miller, that was a debacle when he became the setup man. He gave up home runs in 3 straight appearances and then went to the injury list.
Yep.
A Bearclaw and allowed inherited runners to score in every appearance before yesterday. I think he had pitched 9 times before yesterday, and in at least 4 of those appearances, the inherited runners he came on and inherited scored.
For 7 times, yeah, until yesterday.
7 for 7.
So, and again, so those aren't reflected in his numbers, but you look at some of these, the fielding independent pitching, which, you know, takes away some strange factors, numbers like 10.3, 9.5, 15.1, 84 of a FIP for Austin Williams. It's telling you these guys are not effective. And
those are basically the ERAs the pitchers control.
Yeah. And what should happen is some of these things equalize and they get better. Trevor Rosenthal will not finish this year with a 40.5 ERA, but you also can't trust him because you're playing nothing but close games. They need some laughers. They honestly probably need a blowout or 2. They need a game where Trevor doesn't matter. If you give up 10 runs, you give up 10 runs, you're finishing these couple of innings. They need something to break. Instead, they're playing nothing but close games. Even games they have that aren't close are turning close. That, to me, it just is a recipe for huge amounts of problems. Because, again, it's a loss. They're not all created equal. It's demoralizing when you've got to go to your closer. You've got to go to your closer when you're up 12-1 in the 7th and you still need him. And then he goes on the disabled list. Then there's a feeling like, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Brent Johnson played for the Caps, longtime NHL goalie, now on NBC Sports Washington's Capitals coverage. He works pre and post with me on Capitals faceoff and overtime quite frequently. We'll talk to Johnny next. Got to get his thoughts on if this team's in trouble and whether or not they can rally without TJ Oshie coming back to D.C. You're listening to Grant and Danny.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This Caps update is presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable. Business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online at pvipvi.com today. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on your flagship home for the Caps. And every playoff goal and every playoff moment will be heard right here on 106.7 The Fan. One of those moments that you wish wouldn't have happened. TJ Oshie getting run into the boards on a boarding call last night. Should have been a five-minute major. It wasn't. It was a two-minute minor. But we've now got a little bit more detail as Oshie has been ruled out for Game 5 in D.C. tomorrow night. Todd Reirden has said that Oshie will be out indefinitely. On Devontae Smith-Pelly, who has been recalled from Hershey, Reirden did confirm that he expects him to be in the lineup and playing on the fourth line tomorrow evening. Let me go back to Oshie for a second with you, Danny. Out indefinitely. Reirden said he doesn't expect him to play for a while last night. What is a while? A while could be a week. That's a while without TJ Oshie. A while could be a month. Out indefinitely could be, we're not really sure. It's going to be a couple of games. It's going to be the rest of the playoffs. Who knows? My concern and fear when I went to bed last night was when Todd Reirden met with the media today, right around 1:30, that he was going to say that TJ Oshie is done for the rest of the playoffs. That, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but this was my concern, my fear. Yeah, he broke his collarbone or he's got some type of separated shoulder, whatever it was. And he just comes out and says that and he says he's out for 4 to 6 weeks. We're not going to see him again in the playoffs. That didn't happen. Now, that doesn't mean that's not the injury. That doesn't mean he's just not going to confirm yet to Carolina to give them any added energy or momentum that one of our best players isn't around if you're Todd Reirden. But he didn't come out and say the playoffs are done for TJ Oshie. He just said he's out indefinitely. What do you take out of that?
Here's what it sounded like to me. And of course, this is the high-level medical opinion of armchair doctor, Mr. Danny Ruye. I know medicine very, very well. I thought we'll see in September for training camp. That's what I thought it meant. I think there's...
When he said out indefinitely,
yeah,
you took that?
That's how I thought it was. Meaning we don't believe he's coming back.
But are you basing that on what last night looked like or him just saying he's out indefinitely?
What it looked like and then the immediate reaction. Because usually it's, we'll know more, we'll let you guys know tomorrow, we'll tell you.
I agree.
This was a, yeah, this is really, really
so
bad.
So your point,
you
though, is today's kind of irrelevant. Because after last night, that's what I thought.
Uh-huh.
When I saw Reardon's tone, when I saw him immediately lobbying for the suspension, I thought, TJ Oshie's done. He's cooked. His season is over. He just played his last game in 2019 with the Capitals until he's back at it in October to start the new year. This had a different tone today, and part of me wonders, and this is just probably me being optimistic, but I'll serve this up as a question to you. Look, his job last night right after the game, we saw this in the past with like Zach Aston-Reese and some other guys where there were injuries or guys left the ice, and you see coaches like Mike Sullivan lobbying to get Tom Wilson suspended. His job was to make it sound as bad as possible so that it only helps your cause when the Department of Player Safety gets together the next morning, right? So to go from what he said yesterday to out indefinitely, he didn't rule him out for the rest of the playoffs. He could have.
No, I know he could have. But again, I go to what I usually would expect because they're so tight-lipped and nobody shares information. A guy with a concussion has an upper body injury and is out, whatever. Usually what I would see is, it doesn't look good, but we'll let you know tomorrow. We'll tell you. This was right away, yeah, he's not playing for some time. Meaning we have no illusions that he's coming back to us anytime soon. That's just how I took it. But again, I hope to be pleasantly surprised. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that we do see TJ Oshie. I hope that it was like what it was for Nicklas Backstrom last year, where he was clearly not himself and then worked his way back in. And then by the time they're going up against Tampa, he's close to being Nicklas Backstrom again. And he helped the Caps on the way to a Stanley Cup. But that would require the Caps to do yeoman's work without TJ Oshie, who is instrumental to what they do. But my viewpoint is I'm counting on not having TJ Oshie, and if he's back, I'll make a pleasantly surprised face.
Reirden was asked about Kuznetsov, who just hasn't been able to find the 2018 form that led the Caps to the Cup. He was the best player in the NHL postseason last year, and it's why the Capitals had a parade here in D.C. He said only that he wouldn't really, I think the quote was, there's a lot of things that go on with the team, and he wouldn't divulge a lot of information, but he did say, I expect more from him in Game 5. He's got to be the number one guy at this point, you accentuate, as saying, if they're going to turn this thing around, it's got to start with fill in that blank. It's got to be Kuznetsov. Look, you and I have both said, Verana, a 24-goal scorer who's been held off the stat sheet, a problem. Brett Connolly, who had the first great shot of the night, a good glove save, one of probably only three or four really good saves by Mrazek last night, who wasn't tested all that much. But Connolly got his first good look of the series. That was good to see. He's mostly been library quiet and silent game to game. The ceilings of those guys, though are they could be good players. They could score 20-plus goals. Kuznetsov can make the Capitals unbeatable when he's playing at a level that you saw last playoffs. And he turned it on midway through some of those series, and all of a sudden, being down 1-0 to Las Vegas, 2-0 to Columbus, 1-0 to the Penguins, 3-2 to the Lightning, it didn't matter anymore. Because Kuznetsov wasn't going to let you lose. I'm not sure if that's just a button you can hit or if it's a groove you get into. It's like a hitter getting hot. You always want to get hot.
Hey, get hot real quick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what it is. Everything goes your way. Every pass you make works. All your little twisters and your drop passes find sticks. They need that to happen again. But it's not as simple as him just waking up tomorrow and deciding to do that. People act like he's not out there trying to be the same guy. I bet that he is. It just hadn't come to fruition.
So I think there are two columns. Column one is your greats have to be great. That's a normal axiom in sports, right? That's a basic thing. Ovechkin, I would say, has been great. He was really good in three of the games. Nobody was any good
game three. They may as well have let us all form a hockey team and play.
And even still, there was give a damn. I mean, he got in the fight and he's getting after
right.
it. So it matters. Ovechkin's there. Hasn't been there for Kuznetsov. That has to change. Otherwise, this is all kind of gum flapping, right? Column two is the following guys. Andre Burakovsky, Brett Connolly. To a lesser degree, maybe, but still important. Carl Hagelin, Jacob Vrana's in that group. And maybe you could point to one other guy if you wanted to, whether it's a Boyd or somebody else. All those guys have zeros. I don't mean low point totals. I mean zeros through four games in terms of points. That has to change. Otherwise, they're not winning this series. They're not winning any series. You can't go through a potential 6 or 7 game series and get no. I'm not even talking about an assist. I'm not even talking about a secondary assist. No points at all. Burakovsky, Connolly, Hagelin, Chandler Stephenson, who may or may not be in the lineup, and Jacob Vrana. That has to change. Again, if we don't get a minimum of one of those two things, the Caps are going home. And if you don't get both of those things, we're not in for the kind of run we have come to enjoy in the last calendar year.
Yeah, I think getting home, you play your game, and they're going to look different and better. I'm confident in that. And I thought, honestly, like you said, Game 4, no comparison to Game 3. That's a 50-50 toss-up hockey game.
Agreed.
That's the playoff games we've been watching for years
yes.
against Pittsburgh and everyone else. You win some of those, you lose some of those. It's why they go 7 games in just about every series they play. There's been one disaster. It was Game 3. And I was worried about that carrying over, and it really didn't. It to me, at this point, it feels kind of like that was a fluke game. So I'll leave that in the rearview mirror. I think getting the energy at Capital One Arena, getting the fans behind you, all those things are going to help. But the bottom line is, last year, it sounds like a dumb simplification, but I'm comfortable using it. A lot of things went their way. A lot of those bounces, the posts, the crossbars. Last night, real early, John Carlson hit a crossbar. Last year, maybe that trickles off the crossbar and underneath into the cage. You need a couple of those things to work out in your favor tomorrow. It happened in the first couple of games of this series. Needs to happen in Game 5. You're up 3-2 at that point. You got two cracks to stick a fork in Carolina. If you guys want to chime in on that, you can. 800-636-1067. Just to reiterate, if you're just jumping in the car or just turning on the radio, Todd Reirden has ruled T.J. Oshie, T.J. Oshie out for tomorrow and indefinitely. He'll be out for the Capitals. Apparently, he's still got more meetings with doctors before there's more of a timeline known, according to what Reirden told reporters. Devontae Smith-Pelly has been recalled from Hershey, and Reirden says he will be in the lineup. There's a lot going on outside of just the Capitals in the postseason. NBA, NHL play this weekend. We'll give you a full preview of the slate, including a look at the Nats series with the Marlins. And what the Redskins have on the docket at Redskins Park is they prep for the draft before we get out of here at 2 o'clock. Plus, those tickets to the Redskins draft party could be yours next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nats get started with the Marlins in Miami tonight. These are the types of series you got to find a way to get two out of three in. Miami is going to be a punching bag in the division, and the team that does the best job dominating the Marlins is probably going to win the East. So here's your first crack at it. Anibal Sanchez, Caleb Smith tonight. Now, Danny, Caleb Smith, the lefty pitching for Miami, is very good. He's got 21 Ks in 17 innings, and his whip is under one at .88.
He's nasty.
Hard hit percentage of 18.4, top five among all starting pitchers in baseball. So if there's going to be a night where it's hard to score some runs, it could be this evening. You need Anibal Sanchez to be sharp. But this is a pretty big series now looming for the Nationals.
And it sounds funny to say that going up against a 4-15 team is big, but I agree with you 100%. I think the top four teams, the NL East, are going to beat each other's brains in all season. We've already seen it, right? All the bullpens have terrible ERAs. Everybody's struggling. If you go 15-4 against the Marlins, there's a great chance you win the division. I mean, I know that sounds extreme, but that's what's on the table here, is you beat up this team, you harvest your nuts, Eddie Jordan style, you got a great chance to win this division because the National League is deep, it's competitive, and the National schedule coming up, by the way, is not kind. It's a lot of St. Louis, who's really good. The Padres are playing good baseball. They go out to Colorado, who's not having a great season, but they've won four straight. You got the Dodgers, you got the Brewers, you got the Cubs, you got more divisional opponents. There is nothing easy coming up.
Nats also have Scherzer and Strasburg going in this series against the Marlins. Elsewhere around the major leagues, Tim Anderson got suspended for his role in a benches-clearing brawl, or benches-clearing shouting match, I guess.
Yeah.
White Sox, Royals. Anderson, who's been known to celebrate and bat flip, and he's got a big personality, and he likes to have fun while he plays baseball, which is a problem, obviously. He threw his bat after a home run, like a javelin, toward his dugout and kind of screamed to his teammates and admired his homer. He's hitting over 400. He's one of the better young players in baseball this year.
Exciting young player, yeah.
Really good infielder. Who's been a top prospect in their system for a couple years. The Royals didn't take well to that. They threw behind his back in his next at bat, so he got ejected, and the pitcher who threw behind his back got ejected. Anderson is going to serve a suspension. He's going to miss more time than the pitcher who threw at him. This is always dumb, and it never makes any sense to me. I don't even think he should have been suspended. He violated the unwritten rule by celebrating, but he didn't get into a fight after he got thrown out. He went to first. He basically got into a screaming match because a guy threw a baseball 90-plus miles an hour at him. But he got not only suspended, but because he's a position player, he'll miss more time than the pitcher.
I'd love to hear the rationale for this. Is it his role in inciting some sort of brawl? Because you don't get to suspend somebody for unwritten rules, right? You suspend him for breaking whatever rules. So if he charged the mound, if it's suspension for that, it's dumb, but I guess it's letter of the law. Again, we have not gotten far enough in advancing baseball until pitchers who purposefully throw baseballs at hitters are suspended a multiple factor of what the hitters are suspended. It's not enough. It will never be enough, in my opinion. They cannot figure this out. So the guy who threw at him will miss one turn through the rotation, or you know, a bullpen outing 1 week, maybe.
It means basically he gets pushed back a day or two.
That's all it is.
He doesn't even miss a start. He just gets pushed back.
It is so frustrating to me. Again, because when this dumb tradition started, guys threw 84 and wiped snot on the ball like Ed Harris.
Last night in the NBA, the 76ers beat the Brooklyn Nets by 16 points to take a 2-1 series lead. The San Antonio Spurs topped the Nuggets at home by 10. So San Antonio, an underdog in their first-round series, up 2-1. And the Golden State Warriors responded to blowing the largest playoff lead ever overcome in a postseason game to the L.A. Clippers. They went up 2-1 behind Kevin Durant. He poured in nearly 30. They won 132-105.
Working on the rookie, shakes him. He's got another one. Kevin Durant with 25 on the board now.
TNT on the call. Durant was just in sharpshooter mode last night. He took the first two shots, knocked them both down. I think he hit his first seven shots from the floor. But he just decided whatever happened in game two is not going to happen again.
Patrick Beverley is such a great defender. I mean, he is such a great defender, and it doesn't matter. If Kevin Durant decides now and he flips the switch, he's getting buckets. It's really, really incredible. The Clippers had a really good scheme early on in this series to try to force things to be, because you can't stop Golden State. Only they can stop themselves if they're just not focused or, you know, mailing in some regular season game. But they've got a good scheme to slow them down. None of that even matters. They're so talented. They're so good.
Three games tonight in the NBA playoffs. The Raptors and the Magic tip off at 7 o'clock in Orlando as the series has shifted to Florida. Toronto got a win in game two. Series is now even. Game three, a little bit of a rubber match in the early going here. Looks like Toronto's gotten their footing. 8:30 tip off tonight for the Celtics and the Pacers on ABC. Boston's up 2-0. Kyrie Irving not having any problems winning in the playoffs without LeBron so far, thanks to the fact, probably more than anything else, that Victor Oladipo is not available for Indiana. That would have been a really good series if they had been healthy. It's not going to be now.
And I still thought it would be a better series because Indiana struggled, obviously, initially without having Oladipo, but they held serve. They kind of stuck where they were in the Eastern Conference and played really well together as a team.
Is Bojan Bogdanovic still getting buckets for them as their best four?
I mean, and down
what
the stretch.
What a player he became after leaving here.
Yeah, who would have thunk it, right? And down the stretch, they basically were running him into the ground, running the same kind of wing screen and everything else. Miles Turner is a complete player.
He was pouring in like 26 points.
Absolutely. He could play. He's been their best asset. But Boston, it's interesting, kind of going with their most talented group and just saying, let's let that happen, right? It's Irving, it's Tatum, it's Horford, Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward together. They're sort of just going to figure the rest out.
The series I was most wrong about so far, 9:30 East time start tonight on ESPN for the Blazers and the Thunder. I know Portland was favored. They hosted the first two games, up 2-0 so far. A lot of people felt good about Oklahoma City coming into this series. They've got to get a win or else they are in huge trouble. Must win for them this evening.
Story of game one was Enes Kanter, an afterthought, a guy that, you know, just was sort of around. We were missing Yusef Nurkic, right? Because he had his breakout season. Kanter was unbelievable. They get 20-18 in that first game. Portland is pretty good right now. They've got one more player, it seems like, than OKC does.
Five playoff games overall tonight. Two in the National Hockey League. The Bruins back in Boston against Toronto. A 2-2 series shifting now to Boston, where the Leafs and Bruins have kind of exchanged victories here. So the winner of this matchup in the driver's seat going into game six. And how about Philip Grubauer? Had an awesome game for Colorado a couple of nights ago as they won in overtime. They have the one seed Calgary on the verge of elimination, up 3-1 in that series. Of course, the Caps back in action without TJ Oshie tomorrow night. They'll drop the puck at 8 Eastern at Capital One Arena. I'll be on pregame coverage starting at 6:30.
Nice,
you can watch me post as well on NBC Sports Washington. Danny, they need it. You can't go down 3-2 and have to win back-to-back when you've dropped 3 in a row at that point.
It's not technically a must-win, but come on, right? After losing 2 straight, it would be very, very nice to have. Quick note, who loves former Capitals goaltenders more than the Colorado Avalanche? Nobody, right? And that's what they do. They date goaltenders that we broke up with. They love that bit.
Seems like their move at this point. Going to be a nice weekend, hopefully weather-wise, after today. It gets comfortable.
Tornado warning apparently
again
for this area? What are we doing?
But that's tonight's going to stink, but what about Saturday, Sunday? Are we looking okay?
Let me take a look at the official. We don't have the Doppler, do we?
70 or so degrees without rain is what I'm asking for.
I got 70 on Saturday, a high, and Sunday, showers and 63 is a high. Just according to my phone.
I'll take that. I'll take 63 for the occasional showers.
Yeah, me too.
As long as it's not raining all day.
I just want the not sweating corollary to apply.
If you missed any part of today's show, including EJ Raddick of NHL Media, you check out the podcasts from this broadcast at thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio.
CDBTW is up next. Big one. 4.5 hours. 4-seamers versus 2-seamers. What should you throw and why? What's more effective at getting out in today's baseball? That's next on Chat.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.